know a lot of girls be thinking my songs are about them.
And listening to The Monty Show. I'm Monty, that's Jake, and we are loaded as always. Hello to everybody on Facebook Live. Hello to everybody on Periscope Live, and of course, we appreciate you on iTunes and SoundCloud as well. Big show as always, OKC and Cleveland tonight. Melo and Russ are back. Is it a statement game for LeBron? Steve Kerr quit last night. Lonzo Ball may never play again. Okay, I'm probably being bitter.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. They always got to be in the news.
The Balls?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Love it when Balls are in the news.
Yeah, for sure.
Who's the best team in baseball? Shohei Ohtani is not the best pitcher or combo player guy.
Wait, I thought he hit.
And Taco Bell is better than Chipotle. I'm going to make that argument on this show. Jake, what are we listening to?
This is Drake, Best I Ever Had.
All right, hey, let's get right to work because, again, I think there is a lot to talk about, especially NBA-wise. I think this game OKC and Cleveland tonight is massive because I think almost every game for the next, month? And certainly as we head for the All-Star break, every game for the Cavs is another chance to prove that they are something new and something different than what they were. I think this is a huge game for them.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly still have a lot to prove. You were able to beat the Celtics, a team that has been better than you all season. You were able to handily beat them. And it kind of exposed the idea that the Celtics are not as good offensively as Kyrie made them look. Tonight, I think the challenge with OKC is that you kind of have a three-headed beast in OKC. You've got Russell Westbrook, you've got Paul George, and you've got Steven Adams. And
everybody else
is just kind of helping them out. So my question is, who wins the individual battles? You know Paul George is going to win his. You know Russell Westbrook is going to win his, and Steven Adams is just going to battle. So I don't know. I think it's going to be an exciting game. I think if you're OKC, you want to run. You don't want to play half court. You want to run. And
yeah,
I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think so. The half court thing versus run thing, discipline for OKC is a problem. And I think now with the news tonight that Melo and Russ are back with Paul George, I don't happen to be the biggest Carmelo Anthony fan in the world. And I'm curious your thoughts on this. Has he been a good acquisition for them? He certainly helps them.
I don't think he's brought his value. I don't think he's carried his weight. That's the problem.
Right, but he certainly helps them, right? Like, I mean, they're better with Carmelo than they are without him.
Of course, any team I think is better with him than without. You certainly don't want him playing against you because any given night he can put up 50 if he wanted to. You know, he's capable of that, but he's not. He's a defensive liability in my opinion. And I think... you know, he's just kind of past it now. I don't think he's bringing just a huge amount of value for the money you have to pay him. So that's
sure.
My biggest problem.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm curious about that as well. And the money in the NBA, you just have to forget about it. You can't worry about the money in the NBA. You can't worry about, what people think about your game. To be really elite in the NBA, you just have to be you. The problem is I don't think that Carmelo Anthony helps them. I think there's a lot of trips down the floor, especially defensively, where he hurts them more than he helps them.
And I just don't know that he fits in that great with what they have there. I feel like he's kind of the odd duckling there because a lot of teams in the NBA now, and you can look at the Warriors or whoever you want to look at that's good right now, those teams all have three guys that really carry the boat. And then they have everybody else that just kind of goes with it.
Oh, yeah.
And Carmelo would be the fourth out of on that team because Steven Adams is one of those guys for them. You know, you have Westbrook, and then you have Paul George. Those three guys are contributing the most to that team, and everybody else kind of fits in around them. And then I feel like Carmelo has an awkward position because he's not really sure, okay, well, do I play the four? Do I play the three?
Like, they need him to be a bench guy. They need him to be a sixth
they
man.
Do.
And I don't know that his ego would allow him to do that. Now, they're seven games over. The problem for them is that they're two back of Minnesota in the fourth spot, which is home court advantage. Minnesota, by the way, has got Houston tonight. So that's going to be an important game. This is a huge game in the NBA. And again, I know it's a day short of Valentine's Day. So when we're talking about huge games in the NBA, we need to be a little mindful of exactly what it is that we're talking about. But my opinion is that this game tonight is critical for both sides. Oklahoma City has to finish the year in fourth because they're not a team that I believe can go on the road and successfully expect to win series. I don't see that happening.
Not in the West.
And if it's Minnesota, it's going to be really difficult for them to not have home court advantage against Minnesota and win a series,
yeah,
in my opinion. Yeah. So if you're OKC, you got to climb past Minnesota in the standings. I think clearly they have the ability to do that. I think the bigger story tonight, and perhaps the most compelling story tonight, is that you have to find a way to validate yourself if you're LeBron and the Cavs.
Right.
I think that's almost certainly what tonight is about. Do they continue to do that, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be a close game. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I think these guys are still in that mindset that, you know, they're going to bring a lot of energy to the table. They're still in that position where they still feel like they have a lot to prove. You know, you came over, if you're Larry Nance and Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson, if you're the new guys on this team, you came over to a playoff contender. That's the real problem, you know, for OKC. These guys are motivated. These guys want to win. You know, they're not just kind of going through the motions and kind of just playing out the season. They're like, hey, we're on a playoff contender now. I actually have a reason to play hard.
Yeah.
And now that they're doing that, it makes them a lot better of a team. LeBron has guys around him who are actually trying and who actually bring something to the table. And then LeBron can
What does
work
that mean, though,
them.
When you say – because I don't think it's factual to say that he hasn't had guys around him who bring things to the table. I think he had an odd mix of guys.
I think he had a bunch of guys who weren't motivated on any level. Jay Crowder wasn't motivated. Isaiah Thomas was not motivated.
Yeah, but I don't want to scapegoat guys like Jay Crowder.
I'm not scapegoating him. I'm just saying that it's kind of a fact that that mix of guys didn't work. And the last five games they had together, it was brutal, was embarrassing on many levels. So now LeBron's got an influx of energy and an influx of positive vibes, if you will, and they're right back where they want to be.
Yeah, I think you need to be careful with the way that you consider what happened in Cleveland. But anyway, we can keep going back to what a jerk Isaiah Thomas apparently was and what a terrible teammate Isaiah Thomas apparently was. But he's not there anymore. He's a Laker. And I think for LeBron now, the excuses have been taken away. And you have a nice mix of guys that are going to grind defensively. You'd love to see them knock off 5 points on average of what they're giving up. You can't give up 109 points and think that you're going to win.
Right.
That's not going to happen in this league or any other. And right now, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are third in the East, so it's not like they're fighting for a playoff spot, they're third in the East. If you look at their defense, they're giving up 110 points a game. They got to find a way to drive that number down. They've got to get as close to 100 as they can. With what they have there now, I do think that they can get down to 105, 103.
Yeah.
They're not getting down to 100 probably this year because they're not good enough, but yeah. I think it'll be close.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I think you have Rodney Hood is a guy with a lot of defensive prowess. George Hill is probably going to be the leader of that defense on most levels. Him and LeBron are going to anchor the defense. So, yeah, I think he's got a lot of guys around him now that want to play defense and look forward to playing defense. And honestly, are the right size guy. Again, you don't want to go back to IT, but that's one of his flaws. And I'm not trying to scapegoat him, but that he was a defensive liability and still is. So I think for LeBron, you're happy about that.
Are you a LeBron guy? Your tone has changed on him.
Well,
are you a LeBron guy? Or are you an anti-LeBron guy?
It depends on the conversation. If we're talking about winning and greatness, I'm not a LeBron guy. If you're
this crap about him taunting the legends of the Celtics,
I think that's funny. I think that's hilarious. He played 48 minutes, dude, and dominated. And the whole time, he's staring them down every time he makes a big play.
So it was Paul Pierce night on Sunday.
Yeah.
And it was Cavs and Celtics at the Garden. And on the baseline were a bunch of Celtic legends, including Paul Pierce, Doc Rivers was there, like, you know, KG, all those guys, except Ray Allen.
Right.
Those guys were all there. And LeBron James, when he was on offense at that end, made several critical shots and just stared towards the Celtic legends.
Yeah. I love it.
Did he need to do that, or do you just like that he did that?
I just like that he's got the bravado and the macho to just say like, hey boys, what's it like sitting on the sideline while you're watching me own your team? You know, like I just think it's just who LeBron is, I feel like. I feel like it's nice to see LeBron having that kind of killer mentality, that I don't care what you think, I'm better than you mentality. I think that's good to see.
What did you think of Steve Kerr last night, not coaching the team? He handed the whiteboard to Andre Iguodala.
Okay, fine line. I agree it's disrespectful just to start the conversation, but to say he wasn't coaching the team to be specific,
well, he wasn't coaching the team in the huddle.
In the huddle. He was letting the players have the huddle. And if you got into it, Steve Kerr said that, hey, you know, I felt like they were tired of hearing my voice. I felt like they needed a night to just be them. And, yeah, it was at the sacrifice of the Phoenix Suns, who, as everybody knows, aren't very good. And I thought it was interesting that Jared Dudley said that, you know, we probably don't deserve that respect. Yeah, it's disrespectful, but maybe we don't deserve that level of respect. And I kind of agree with that.
Can we stop overthinking everything?
How is it overthinking?
That's way overthinking it. It wasn't disrespectful to the other team. It just are who you are. If it's disrespectful, then maybe you should go and beat them.
Yeah.
It's not that you're overlooking the opponent. Man, that drives me crazy. That, you know, this is... It's the MB freaking A. They're all making millions of dollars and tens of millions of dollars.
What do you say to the guy who says, well, he wouldn't have done that against a better team? Like, because that's the standpoint.
I don't know if he would have done that against a better team. How do you know he wouldn't have done it? Nobody knows that. Steve Kerr has always been unorthodox. Yes, it was the Suns. And the Suns are terrible.
Yeah.
And they were terrible for a lot of that game last night. You know, I just... sorry, man. You lost by what, 50 points or something like that?
Yeah.
Dude, be in the game then. Be in the game.
That's why I don't have a problem with it, because I feel like it was almost a glorified scrimmage, really.
You lost the fourth quarter by 18 points.
Yeah.
That's not accidental. You lost 129-83. Hello, yeah. Like that's what, 46 points?
Yeah.
That's not because Steve Kerr wasn't coaching in the huddle.
Right.
Right? Like that's not please. Is he doing that against LeBron? Is he doing that against the Lakers? Is he doing that against Houston? The Spurs? I don't care who you pick. I don't know. I wouldn't put it past Steve Kerr, but he's not doing that. He's like, the Suns are terrible. I'm going to take tonight off. Like, the guy doesn't even wear a tie. Like, are we supposed to get all wound up because he handed the whiteboard to David West and Iguodala? Hell, man. He let Draymond Green run a huddle. How seriously was he trying? Yeah, you know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying.
Come on. That's the kind of thing where I'm like, okay, great. We're politically correct now.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just, to me, that's just.
I mean, it's definitely a soft perspective to take on. I could see where he's coming from, where Steve Kerr's coming from when he says that the team may have been tired of his voice, and this was a good opportunity to give him the huddle.
By the way, you said something yesterday on the show I thought was interesting, and I kind of blew it off because I was like, no. You asked me if Lonzo Ball was a bust.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no. It's too early. It's not even the All-Star break.
He's a ball. He's going to be a baller. Come on.
Well, he's not going to play at least until the All-Star break is over.
Mm-hmm.
It came out today that Lonzo's out until the break is over. They play the Pels tomorrow.
Makes sense.
Yeah, they play the Pels tomorrow, and I get it.
Yeah.
But at what point does this really become a problem? Because they're back-to-back. They've got two games left before the break, right?
Right.
They're back-to-back, and they really... In my opinion, I think they need him to get every minute that he's supposed to get. I don't have any... Is the word confidence that a week from Friday when they play the Mavericks at Staples Center, are we supposed to believe that Lonzo is going to be back on the floor? That's another, 10 days from today?
Yeah.
That he's going to have to rest?
Yeah.
Somehow, I think they need him back on the floor. He's got this knee injury, a knee sprain.
Sprained MCL.
I mean, this is starting to turn into something now. This is not Markelle Fultz in Philly. That's not what this is.
Is Fultz just the yips, or is it an injury?
No, it's you say the yips. I say he's got incredibly bad shooting form that's gotten worse from the time he entered the NBA somehow. I think the shoulder injury was minor and it was used to cover. And now, I mean, they've been pretty honest that he's just not going to play so that they can remake that shot.
Yeah.
So
smart.
That's a disaster. That's an absolute disaster. There's no other way to look at that. And I'm not saying that that's who Lonzo Ball is, but he has only played in 36 games. That's a problem. They've got to get him going. They have got to get him playing again. I would imagine they're working on his shot as well, I would hope. But this is a guy that shot 35.5% from the floor.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Not good.
This is a guy that shot 30% from three. Oh.
Not good.
That's not good.
Not good.
Now, he's giving you 7 assists a game, but here's the other problem.
Is that a nice number?
That's a great number. That's a great number. Because he's also getting into the rack. He's getting layups. He's a good rebounding guard. Like, he was doing other things. Here's the other problem, though. This is a different team now. And they've learned to play without him before the Isaiah Thomas trade.
Right.
And now, Isaiah Thomas is going to cement himself in that lineup.
Yeah.
And you could keep telling me, well, we all know that Isaiah's not coming back next year. Lonzo's the guy of the future. Well, the future started 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And now the guy just hasn't played. I mean, if you think about the fact that we are, we're at Valentine's Day essentially tomorrow, he hasn't played in a month.
Yeah,
he hasn't played since January 13th.
Are they babying him, or do you think he's needed all this time? Because I feel like there's a really fine line between being, you know, careful with a guy and kind of going overboard with the recovery, making sure, yes, Lonzo's 100%, let's put him back in.
Well, he missed something like 6 games.
Right.
Played 4 games, and now he hasn't played in a month. So that makes me think the injury was legitimate. I got a little knee pain. Okay, well, let's sit you out 6 games, a couple of weeks. Let's sit you out 6 games, and let's see what happens. Okay, I'll come back, and I'll play 5 games, play a heavy load of minutes, and now I'm out for a month. Makes me think there was an injury there.
Right.
But now it feels like it's one of two things. The injury is either more severe, which I don't think it is because he's practicing and shooting around
and
before games
fine.
And looks fine doing it. Now it makes me seem like they're pulling their foot off the accelerator here. And is that to fix his shot? Is that to let this thing with his dad die down? I don't know. Jordan Clarkson took a pretty non-veiled shot. He essentially came out and said he's glad to be away from the LeVar Ball noise.
He laughed about it and was like, I'm out on that.
Well, yeah, I think he was more serious than not.
Yeah.
And I agree with him.
But I don't blame him.
Is that what this is? Giving, you know, Lonzo. The problem is now what's Lonzo doing? Working on his rap career.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on. Guy, and if I'm the Lakers, this is what's wrong with LeVar Ball. He's got a shoe deal. Well, his daddy got him a shoe deal. He's got a rap career. He's going to do a concert in Lithuania over the summer. He's releasing tracks. I guess that's cool. By the way, are you working on your J?
Like, that's what I mean. Like, he's not a as Zorg from the Fifth Element would say, a born-in-the-wool killer. He is not a born-in-the-wool basketball player.
No,
the guy doesn't just want to be the best he can be at basketball. He cares about the overall image. He wants to be out in the spotlight. He wants to live up to the alleged quote-unquote Ball name. Like, he's just not, for me, he's not the guy you wanted. But for me, he was the guy you had to take because of, you know, he went to UCLA and he did those things. So I don't know. I'm not saying it was a mistake to draft him. I'm just saying that at some point I feel like you got to rein it in a little bit and say, hey, look.
But how do you do that with LeVar? There's no reining LeVar in. You rein LeVar in and it gets louder. It doesn't get more quiet.
Well, I don't know. I'm not saying you rein LeVar in. I'm saying you.
But he's the problem. You don't need to rein in.
Well, if
Lonzo
doesn't get better, though, what does getting better for Lonzo Ball look like this season? Just getting back out there.
Just getting back out there and looking like you have an idea of what the offense is supposed to look like, which I'm sure he does. Get me to 40%. You don't need to shoot 50% from the floor. Just get me to 40%. How about you make 32, 33? How about every time you shoot a three, it looks a little better? You know, like, that's all you need.
And I can't really speak to this, you know, hardcore, but it doesn't seem like he wants to change that shot or, like, that's a priority.
I don't know. That's an awful I don't think you can say – I don't think you can say that.
36 games. A lot of – all you're doing is
basketball
player.
He shot that way his entire life. That's not 1 year at UCLA. He shot that way his entire life. You know how hard that is.
I know how hard it is, but what I'm saying is if you compare him to Fultz, Fultz is working on that. He's getting that better. It may be ugly now, but if you take an entire NBA season, like 6-8 months, and work on a shot, it will get better.
Yeah, and by the way, Luke Walton said today that today's practice was the first time he'd had contact, and it went well, Lonzo Ball.
Right.
And their argument is, well, it's going to be 10 days before we play again, so I'm just going to let it go.
Right.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's all well and good.
But he needs to be back.
You got
to
get his ass back on the floor. Because at some point, Lonzo Ball is going to start regressing instead of progressing.
And that's my thing. At what point do the Lakers just say, okay, look, it's time for you to get back? Like, how careful is too careful with an NBA player?
It sounds like, and Luke Walton's saying all the right things. I mean,
but he's a tactician of the media. I mean, the guy understands how to play the game.
Yeah, he was. Look, Luke Walton's a good head coach, and he's a good politician, which you need to be.
Right.
But there's to me, there's some kick clubs going on here, and I get it. I get it. But you're telling me now that Lonzo's back at full strength in practice. Why can't he play the next two nights? Or at least one of the two nights. He needs as much game action as he... Like, every bounce of the ball, wearing the purple and gold, is an important bounce of the ball. That game experience is critical. This is not... Who's the worst team? This is not Sacramento. This is not everybody's crappy basketball team. This is not the Brooklyn Nets. You're not playing in front of 3,000 fans.
Yeah.
You're playing in front of 18,000 fans at Staples Center every night. There's an expectation when Magic Johnson says, hey, he's the next Magic Johnson. That's what Magic Johnson said.
Right.
Lonzo Ball is the next Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
And they're going to build the franchise around him. And he's going to be a perennial all-star. Right now, Lonzo Ball is not a perennial all-star. That's a problem for them. Well, you know, like he is supposedly this icon. Who's going to be the icon? The next free agents they sign, LeBron, is it Paul George, whoever it is.
That's exactly where I was going to go. What happens to Lonzo Ball when you bring a star into the organization?
Yeah,
like
I don't know.
True star in the NBA right now, a LeBron, Paul George type figure.
I worry about his viability as a superstar. Because you have a lot on the line with Lonzo Ball. Like, he is Magic's pick. Like, he is that guy that Magic said, this is my dude. We're going to do this. He's going to be the next me. If that's a bust out, which, by the way, I'm no fan of Magic Johnson. He says and does the wrong thing most of the time.
Yep.
Should Magic Johnson have ever said that Lonzo Ball's talented enough to be the next Magic Johnson?
I don't think anybody should have said anything about Lonzo Ball coming out of the draft.
That's my point.
Like, you can say that stuff about the Kobe's of the world, the LeBron's of the world coming out of the draft. LeBron James,
because
clearly.
Because you knew that LeBron was that guy.
Because you could see it in high school. You could see the dominant, the sheer just, I am better than you are.
But there was some of that with Lonzo at UCLA. I mean, Lonzo was a pretty freaking good basketball player at UCLA.
But isn't there a difference between pretty good and LeBron James good in high school, right?
Well, like, nobody's ever been LeBron James good.
Is Zion Williamson a guy that you would build around? Based off his highlights, yeah, I would.
Sharif O'Neal?
Definitely.
I mean, those are guys that...
But what's the difference between those guys? Those guys are elite physically. Sharif O'Neal is tall as you could want the guy to be.
Absolutely
the guy
right.
is just physically gifted. My problem with Lonzo Ball, and I'm not trying to hate here, but my real problem with Lonzo Ball is...
But I'm about to hate.
He's physically small, in my opinion. He needs to put on a lot of weight, just like players before him. And the problem is he's not an elite shooter. He's not... You could say he's an elite passer. That's all fine and
dandy.
Oh,
he is an elite
but
passer.
But this is not a passing league. This is a scoring league. We're trending away from the point guard that's a distributor and a passer. Those guys don't really exist anymore.
Is that a bad thing, number one? And number two, is that Steph Curry's fault?
It's the fault of guys like Steph Curry, and Steph Curry's partially responsible of it. We're trending more toward Trae Young-style players.
Oklahoma Sooner Trae Young.
We're seeing more and more of those kind of guys now instead of distributors in classic NBA offenses.
I think a guy like Trae Young's interesting because he is very similar to Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Steph Curry's an elite passer, but he's an elite shooter. He's an elite scorer. Steph Curry has every trick in his bag.
And they're saying that Trae Young is further along than Curry was when Curry was where
physically,
Trae Young was.
Trae Young's a man. I mean, if you watch him play, and we've watched him several times, if you watch him play, Trae Young is a man.
Mm.
I agree he's further along physically. But I agree with myself, I guess, because, well, I'm really smart, that Steph Curry changed the game for young players.
Yeah.
Steph Curry brought a brand of basketball to the NBA that I think was sorely missing because I think there was a real risk that this league was plateaued, that LeBron and Kobe had done what they could do. And then when Kobe got hurt,
there was a real fear that there was going to be a big time fall off. There wasn't going to be a guy in the NBA.
Yeah. When Kobe got hurt, that was reality.
There was no more, because once Jordan had left, once he had finished his career, retired and everything, then we were left with guys like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And once those guys left, then you're like, okay, well, who we got now?
Yeah.
We really got LeBron, and hopefully KD turns into something.
Yeah, well, Trae Young is going to be one of those guys. I think this draft coming up is going to be remarkable.
Loaded.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think that
there's
much
more
as
players like Curry,
yeah,
coming
much
up.
as Bird and Magic and Michael created a generation, they created the Kobe's and LeBron's.
Yeah,
I think now Kobe and LeBron created Steph, and now Steph has created a guy like Trae Young.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it means the game is different, but I also think guys like Zion Williamson and Shaquille O'Neal, who are going to be in the NBA probably 2 years from now, those guys are going to be one and dones in college. I think that is when we're going to figure out how the game has changed, because can those guys shoot threes? Can they play only power basketball? Because that's not what the NBA looks like.
Well,
right,
Sharif
now
can shoot. Zion, I'm not so sure. Zion's more of a power guy.
Sharif can absolutely shoot.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It'll be fun. I think that the next 5 years will really be very telling for the next 25 years.
Yeah.
Because the young talent that's developing and I really think it's the guys that are, you know, sophomore, junior, seniors in high school. It's the LaMelo Balls of the world.
Yeah.
It is the Shaquille O'Neals, those guys.
Yeah.
That's who's going to determine the next generation of players in the NBA. And guys like Markelle Fultz will quickly get left behind if they don't figure it out.
Yeah.
Lonzo Ball's too good at just being a basketball guy to get left behind, but that doesn't mean he'll be a superstar or an all-star.
Yeah.
Like, I can look at Shaquille O'Neal. He'll be an all-star every single year.
Yeah.
I can look at
Ben Simmons.
Maybe not. Maybe Ben Simmons will be an all-star every single year for the next decade.
Yeah.
You know, like, I look at guys like Trae Young, and I think I look at that guy and I'm like, yeah, he's going to be an all-star. That guy's got NBA all-star written all over him. So I think the next 5 years will determine the next 25 years. I think it's really, really critical. Hey, I want to get to some baseball, because pitchers and catchers are reporting now. The Angels are in, the Yankees are in, a bunch of teams are in now. Even more will be in at the end of the week. And there are some interesting storylines developing today. I thought it was interesting that once Angels camp broke, Mike Socha talked about Shohei Ohtani being a pitcher first. Well, I say it's interesting because you know that Ohtani had that platelet-rich therapy done on his throwing elbow because he had an issue there. And now they're saying he's in good shape. And there's nothing to worry about until there's something to worry about.
Of course.
But I don't know if this is the right thing to do. If he's got an elbow issue, do you worry about that? Do you make this guy he's a really good hitter, doesn't supposedly have a solid position defensively at the big league level. He's not going to play first because that's where Albert is. But do you let this guy DH twice a week? Do you let this guy get reps in the field? What would you do with him?
I probably would not let him stretch his legs out as a two-way player until he got established as a pitcher first. Because I think establishing yourself as a pitcher in Major League Baseball is difficult.
Very difficult.
There's a lot of just processes you have to go through. There's a lot of learning experiences. There's just a lot that goes into getting comfortable being a Major League pitcher right now. And I think when you look at the quality of hitter in Major League Baseball versus Japan, I think the talent gap there is pretty substantial, at least in my opinion. And so I think for Ohtani, it will be a learning process. There will be his first like 8-10 starts are going to be interesting. Must-watch TV, in my opinion. I mean, you got to watch it. You got to see how he does. But then what will be curious to me is, okay, after those first 10 starts, the league's going to adjust. They're going to understand, okay, what does this guy really got? What's he really going to do? Is he going to be a fastball pitcher, or is he going to be kind of more Darvish-y, yeah, where he's going to throw a bunch of pitches? So once that whole process plays itself out, first 10, 15 starts, then I think you might see him in the field. Then I think you might see, okay, well, hey, you know, today's day three out of day five. You know, you're not going to be throwing for two more days. I'll put you in at DH, or maybe you can play a little – you know, first or something. I don't know. Maybe a little right field, something.
But here's the thing. This is not the same Angels team of the last 10 years. This is a legitimate 1-7. If you look at Kinsler, Trout, Upton, Pujols, Cole Calhoun, Zach Cozart, Andrelton Simmons, who struggles at the plate sometimes, I get it.
Defensive star, though.
That's a really good lineup. And if you get anything from Martin Maldonado or Valbuena, you know, I don't know why CJ Cron, I think, is a major league hitter. I don't know why he doesn't get more reps at first base, because I think Albert Pujols is now resigned to being a designated hitter.
Yeah.
Why you wouldn't start CJ Cron, I don't know, but that's going to be a left-handed stick off your bench. They got Rene Rivera, late of the Chicago Cubs. And then you look at their rotation, and it's Garrett Richards, Shoemaker, Tyler Skaggs, Parker Bridwell, and Shohei Ohtani. Is that a legitimate? Are they going to go a six-man rotation maybe to accommodate Ohtani? I could see that. You know, What are you thinking?
To accommodate Ohtani. Why do we need to accommodate
a guy? The guy needs to earn his ass load of money on him.
I get it. But at some point, hey, you need to earn your stripes too. I love that these Japanese players come over here. And it's like, hey, you know, I was a stud in Japan. I was an MVP. I won Cy Young's, whatever. You know, and all of a sudden they come over here and they think they're going to be sliced bread. And in my opinion, they're just not that good. They are not as good as advertised. They never have been. Ichiro has been the best to ever come over here. And how many Japanese players have come over here and just been all right?
Yeah. And it's not like the rest of the rotation is solid.
No.
I mean, Shoemaker's coming off of forearm surgery or arm surgery of some kind.
Yeah.
Garrett Richards, Ramirez, Tyler Skaggs.
Like, those guys are injury guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so, they're not young. I mean, Ohtani's their youngest pitcher. He's 23. I mean, that's not young anymore. You know, he's not a 22-year-old. And this is one of the things I think you have to look at in baseball now. Who's a great young stud pitcher? Well, if Ohtani delivers, he'd be thought of as a young stud pitcher. But he's already got an arm injury. And this is what you talked about this week, where you have guys that are throwing 200-300 pitches a day in Japan and Korea. So I agree with you on that. His arm age is not young.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that to me is a big deal.
And that's an interesting term, too, that I think people don't think about. The age of the player versus the age of his throwing arm.
Yeah, and they say, again, and I should preface this. The physical says that his arm is 23 years old. But how can it be 23 years old if he's already getting platelet-rich therapy on a sprained ulnar collateral ligament, which is the throwing ligament in your elbow?
Yep.
That says that this guy in the next probably 2 years, 3 years, is going to have Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who believes he's already an elite player, and he's not pitched one pitch in Major League Baseball.
That's what I'm saying.
So I think that's interesting. I don't love them in that division. I think if you look around, that's a pretty good division. Oh, by the way, if you look at who's in the division, it's the world champion Houston Astros, who are going to win 100 games this year again with that lineup. I don't think there's any doubt about that, but Seattle should be better. I don't know what to make of Texas and Oakland. We'll see. But I think they're not a playoff team at this very moment. They are not a playoff team.
No.
And if you look at their projection, they're only projected to be an 80-win team, which, by the way,
they
do the math,
pitching.
Is two under. So they need a lot more pitching. So what about Houston, though? Is Houston still that team where you're like, yeah, this is the best team in baseball?
They're one of the best teams in baseball. I mean, I think when it comes to the best team discussion, I think there's a lot of opinion in that and a lot of how do you feel about player X, player Y.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, yeah, I think they are the best team in baseball because I think they're so dynamic offensively. And when they're getting pitching out of their guys, I mean, it's difficult to beat them. It just is. I mean, that was well on display in the World Series.
Absolutely.
I mean, they don't have, you know, the Chris Sales of the world. They don't have, like, the great – I mean, they have Verlander, but he's aged now, right? I mean, I'm not saying the guy's
35.
Old, but he's
35.
35. I mean, he's getting up there. But he still showed that he's got it. So when all three of their five pitchers are got it going, they're hard to beat.
Yeah. I'm curious how Lance McCullers bounces back. A top 10 pitcher in the first half, a bottom 10 pitcher in the second half. The Garrett Cole trade was, I thought, very important for them. But I think if you start looking at their lineup, their lineup's not young anymore.
Bregman, Correa's,
they're young 20s. Bregman and Correa are 23 now. And I think the trade that really put them over the top was Ryan McCann, because what did that do? That got Evan Gattis out from behind the plate and allowed him to DH, yeah, which is exactly where he should be.
Yep.
But if you look up and down their lineup, Springer's 28, Altuve's 27, Reddick's 31, Gurriel's 33, almost 34. I mean, they're not a young team anymore.
Right.
Obviously, Brian McCann's 34. So their window's not long. Like the not to be a homer, but the Chicago Cubs have a much longer window to play with here, because you're looking at guys like Wilson Contreras, who's 25, almost 26. You're looking at Riz is 29, Chris Bryant's 26, and don't forget that Chris Bryant played a full college career.
Yeah.
So he came out later. Almora's 24, but they don't have a regular starter that's 30. The closest guy to that, it's a tie with Rizzo and Jason Hayward. So they're still a young team with a longer window. Ian Happ's 23 years old, and he's a bench player. You look at a guy like Ben Zobrist. He's a bench player this year. If Ben Zobrist is coming off your bench and he's only asked to play 100 games, 120 games, you're in really good shape.
Yeah.
Their pitching staff continues to be a problem, as we talked about on the show yesterday.
Yeah.
But having said that, I still don't think that Houston's the best team in baseball, because I look at their starting staff. I think they're, like everybody else, weak on the bump. I'm not a Charlie Morton guy. I'm not a Lance McCullers guy. I'm not a Dallas Keuchel guy. I'm not a Garrett Cole guy. And Justin Verlander, at some point, is going to implode. Like, he will humanly combust.
Well, I think Lance McCullers shows you 100% what he's capable of doing. Now, he needs to do that long form. He needs to do that over a whole season, and then I'll start believing that he's, you know, an ace caliber guy. He's got the talent.
Is Garrett Cole elite?
Yes. He just hasn't put up consistent numbers. He has elite talent,
awful.
Dude.
He was awful in the first half
awful?
Last year.
Why was he awful? Because he was throwing last year instead of pitching.
I don't disagree with that.
Throwing the ball as hard as he can and hoping for the best result. You can't do that in baseball. You can't do that in Major League Baseball, I should say. You can do that in AAA, but not in Major League Baseball. The hitters are too good.
Their bullpen was bad last year. At times, they looked like a team that was sputtering down the stretch.
They had two guys they brought out of the bullpen, pretty much down the stretch. That was it.
But they added guys like Hector Rondon from the Cubs, who was one of the worst relievers in baseball.
He needs a resurrection, man.
Joe Smith, who was an average guy. Their best guy down there, obviously, is Ken Giles, who's a stud.
Yeah.
Having said all that, the Washington Nationals are still the best team in baseball, and I know you hate me every time I say that.
I don't hate it. I just think you're basing that just on paper. I mean, for me, I take in the last two seasons really into my account of that, my opinion of that. And I get that they have talent, and I get that they should have beat the Cubs, because that's the truth. They should have beat the Cubs in that series, but they didn't. And what does that say? You can't blame all that on Dusty. Right? Like, it's not all of Dusty Baker's fault that they lost.
No.
Because at the end of the day, players win and lose championships.
But why did they not have him put the ink on that extension? If you remember that infamous story, in September he had an extension ready to be signed.
I don't know. Because I think they have disagreements. And I think they disagreed with how he ran the team.
But look what they've done. Their best free agents re-signed. Matt Wieters picked up his player option. Howie Kendrick re-signed. Ryan Rayburn re-signed. Brandon Kinsler, hugely important guy in their bullpen, he re-signed. I mean, they brought back the best parts of their team. They're not bringing back Stephen Drew. They're not bringing back, you know, Adam Lind, Jason Worth, Joe Blanton, Oliver Perez. You know, so I think that they, when you look at the very tippy top of their roster, I mean, you have to look at somebody like a Max Scherzer. You know, like a Steven Strasburg, a Rendon, a Murphy, a Zimmerman.
Wait, they have their nucleus of guys. They have the same guys that they've had for the past two seasons, and I like that core of guys.
Seven guys in the top 50 of Major League Baseball.
That's all fine and dandy.
Seven guys.
Do something with it. Like, you got to win. You talk about windows. You were talking about the Astros window and the Cubs window. How long is the Nationals window here?
Well, they're at the end of it. I mean, they're another team where everybody's pushing 30 years old.
Their window closed. They signed a couple guys, and it cracked back open. That's what they did. So my point is I'm not saying that they're terrible or that they have no chance, because they do have a very good chance.
They're going to win the World Series this year, I'm telling you.
I don't think they will.
And this is a really critical year for them. If the same thing happens again this year that happened the last several years, Bryce Harper is not going to be there next year.
Yeah.
A year from now, he'll be wearing a Cub uniform. If they win the World Series this year, how does Bryce Harper logically walk away from Washington? He wouldn't do that.
Well, I think the first few days after you win the World Series, you're not going to do it. But when you sit down at the table and you realistically look at his time in Washington, how long did it take to win a World Series, and how many World Series are they going to win moving forward if you win it this year, let's say? That's what you have to look at. Yeah, I think it's his sixth or seventh year, something like that. Yeah. You know, so my thing is, Bryce Harper is the guy that wants to be the best that's ever done it. Like, he's one of those guys. Winning goes into that, but consistency, there's a lot that goes into that, but winning is part of that. And so I think if they don't win, he's for sure out. If they do win, then I think it makes the decision tough, and he's just going to have to decide how bad he wants to play with Chris Bryant.
They've got a bench. Howie Kendrick
resigning.
Dude, they
have everything that you want to have, but they haven't been able to do it.
They got Kinsler back. Scherzer, Strasburg, Gio, Tanner Roark.
Keep listing all these names in July. Keep being this Nationals homer in July. When you're pissed off,
I'm not
Cubs
a Nationals homer.
I think
I'm
you are, though.
I think they're a really good baseball team.
And that's the difference. They're not winners. They're really good.
Who's the best team in baseball?
The Astros. Best team in baseball.
You're going with that?
Yeah.
You're not going to... You still hanging with the Dodgers to win the West?
Yeah, until the Giants prove it, the Dodgers are the team to beat. And I'm a Giants guy, so.
What do you see? And I don't mean to belabor this, because I know we talked about this yesterday on the show. But I find myself shaking my head in the middle of these conversations when I say, what do you see in the LA Dodgers that says they're winning the West?
Because
they're not better than they were a year ago.
Right, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to be better. I think they're going to. Inevitably, every team gets contributions out of guys that you wouldn't expect it from. Every team will get that. Whether it's the Nationals, the Dodgers, or the Astros, it doesn't matter. Every team's going to get contributions out of guys they really shouldn't. Every team's got the guy who's going to have his great A year.
These are just the guys who are gone from LA.
Right.
Right? Curtis Granderson. Andre Ethier.
Oh, both on the outs of their career.
Curtis Granderson made huge plays for them. Big
still
plays.
On the out of their
and
career.
Bang.
He's still out. He's heading out.
Yu Darvish. Brandon Morrow. Those guys are all gone.
Guys who didn't perform in the postseason that are both on the Cubs.
Wow, come on.
I'm serious. I'm being serious.
Come on. I okay. All right. I mean, I look at their starting lineup, and it's Taylor, Seager, Turner, Bellinger, Puig, Peterson, Austin Barnes, Logan Forsythe. Who's the guy in that lineup that you can't pitch to?
Justin Turner?
Not a guy. That's the one guy.
Corey Seager?
No, Corey Seager can be pitched to. Bellinger can be pitched to. Puig absolutely
can
be pitched to.
Dude, you can do that to the Cubs lineup, the Nationals.
You can't. If you look at the Chicago Cubs, if you look at the Washington Nationals, look at the Cubs, because I'm a Cub homer, right? Like, I'm a huge Cub fan. If you look at the Cubs lineup, who's the easy out in that lineup? It's not Almora. It's not Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant, right-hander. Anthony Rizzo, left-hander. Wilson Contreras. Kyle Schwarber, who's in freaking amazing shape. Addison Russell's probably the out in that lineup. Jason Hayward, low and outside, is probably the out in that lineup. And Javi Baez, they say, has completely remade his swing.
Well, maybe he has, but
I mean, one through six?
You can go up every lineup, and you can figure out how to get guys out. It's a matter of execution.
The Astros are not a team I want to try and get guys out on.
No, and
because
that's what I'm saying, they're the best
in
the league.
Yeah, I think they're there. I think the Cubs are there. I look at that Washington Nationals lineup. No, I'm good. Thanks. I don't want to face them. I'm telling you right now, look at that lineup. You cannot legitimately pitch to Turner, Harper, Rendon, Murphy, and Zimmerman and think you're getting through that unscathed. Can you pitch to Eaton?
Right,
yes.
But it's
Taylor,
not about, it's
yes.
Not about
Weeders,
getting through
yes.
It. again, I'm not trying to just be difficult, but in today's game, and we both agree on this, it's no longer about getting through it unscathed. It's just about limiting damage, which is why the Cubs are trying to get Harper, which is why everybody's trying to stack up offensively.
From Trey Turner at number 2 or 8, let's say, from the 2 spot through the 7 spot.
Yeah, it's solid.
You're giving up a home run in that. If there's runners on in scoring position, you're probably giving up an extra base hit or a base hit. Those are not hitters. Those are professional hitters. Those are guys who can go to all fields. Everybody in that lineup, from Eaton, Trey Turner, Rendon, Harper, Murphy. I think Daniel Murphy's probably the best batsman in baseball, right? Like Ryan Zimmerman. Those are all professional hitters. There's 2 outs in that lineup, maybe.
So look at the Dodgers.
Look at the Dodgers. Their pitching staff. Gio Gonzalez will melt down in a critical situation. Kinsler's going to have to be better. We'll see how healthy they are if they get hurt. But look at the Dodgers lineup, man. Chris Taylor, Corey Seager, Justin Turner's the one guy where you're like, yeah. Hey, Cody Bellinger, the book's coming out this year. Don't throw him an inside fastball. Right. Don't, because he's going to hurt you. But Yasiel Puig.
You asked me about the Dodgers as far as the West goes. They're better than the Giants still. In my opinion,
Clayton Kershaw, Rich Hill, Alex Wood, Kenton Maeda, and Hyunjin Ryu. Pretty good rotation, right? The biggest question up in San Francisco is that starting rotation.
In my opinion, you have 2 guys that you can count on. I don't believe you can count on Samardzija. I mean, he'll probably give you 5 to 6 innings. That's
regular season pitcher.
Yeah,
that's it. But Block and Stratton. By the way, look at the construction of their pitching rotation. 3 guys they drafted and 2 free agents. Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija are not theirs. Right? So the formula is there. Like, they have guys in the pipe. The other question is, what is Mark Melancon?
Better is what he's going to need to be, because that
was
pathetic last year.
Terrible.
Pathetic. An
terrible.
Absolute waste of money.
He was awful, man. He was really bad. So anyway, yeah, I mean, this is all personal opinion. We could go round and round. But there's no doubt that Taco Bell is better than Chipotle. I mean, this is not personal opinion. You know,
we're having a nice little debate, and you got to say disrespectful and hurtful things like that. And I just can't, you know.
We're going from personal opinion here, folks, to facts. Taco Bell is better than Chipotle. Now, I'm not telling you it's healthier. I said it's better. There's nothing at Chipotle. Well, besides E. coli. But there's nothing at Chipotle that's better than a Mexican pizza or a chalupa or a double-decker chicken taco. Come on.
If you're trying to eat healthy, there's not a better place than Chipotle. You got all skittish because one dude got sick in Nebraska. Like, yeah, go ahead, pull up the numbers. Great.
Dude, Chipotle had a massive...
Right. Every place has that issue from time to time. Don't eat there then. You can't say, oh, well, Taco Bell is better, even though it's the McDonald's of Mexican food. And then say Chipotle's worse because they had an illness go around.
You know, they passed a couple guys had some lower intestinal issues, gastric pressure. No, they killed people, man. At least 3 reports from customers on IWasPoisoned.com that they suffered violent vomiting and diarrhea after eating at Chipotle on Pico Boulevard in Los Angeles. However, none of the customers said they visited a doctor.
So what are we even talking about? What are we even talking about, bro? If you didn't go to the doctor, what are we even talking about?
Mary, you going to the doctor or what? Because if you're not, we probably can't sue. I just am weirded out by Chipotle right now. I'm just being
right
honest
now,
with you.
It's been like a year now. Like, how long?
It's repeated, though.
I've eaten at Chipotle thousands of times at this point in my life and never had an issue.
Yeah, I mean, they fired their CEO. It's just weird. Like, I look into my burrito bowl and I see guac and pico and I want to eat it. And then I think about dying. And it's
so
hard for me.
So don't get chicken.
Okay. Yeah. Their rate of self-reported foodborne illness is higher for Chipotle than any other restaurant chain in the U.S. The data indicates another outbreak attributed to Chipotle is possible within the next 12 months. You know, okay. I'll go to Taco Bell, you go to Chipotle. Let's see who lives longer.
You're horrible, bro. You are horrible.
Probably, but you'll also be thinner than me. Hey, last thing. Leroy Butler, the former safety of the Green Bay Packers, put out on Twitter today that he and his wife are having some difficulties over whether or not to kick their six-year-old out of their bed and make that six-year-old sleep in his own bed.
Did they consult Tom Brady?
Well, I don't know if he kisses his child on the mouth. I'm not sure. I'll ask Leroy.
In the same bed?
Okay, now that got creepy. Thank you.
I'm just telling you, it's weird,
bro. Way, hey, so WEEI, the radio station.
Jesus, come on.
They suspended Christian Fourier for that Don Yee thing. If you didn't hear about this, Don Yee, who is Tom Brady's agent, is an Asian American, but he was born here, so his name is Don Yee, and they didn't do the research and find out that Don Yee was born in Sacramento. So he doesn't have the prototypical Asian accent that you hear mocked. And
he's an American, bro.
Yeah. Christian Fourier got on the radio and mocked his Asian accent.
Really
smart. He was suspended.
Should have been fired, dude.
He wasn't. Neither was the host who called Tom Brady's daughter. What are they doing? Tom Brady's no longer doing his weekly radio
appearance. They're killing themselves. They're committing suicide as a station.
Three incidents related to Tom Brady. His agent, Don Yee, being mocked by a former Patriot tight end in Christian Fourier. His daughter, Tom Brady's daughter, being called an annoying pissant. And then the Ron Borges fake story that Tom Brady was holding out.
Yeah.
All three of those pointed to Tom Brady.
I don't get it. Like, what are you thinking?
I don't know. Anyway, Leroy Butler, former Packer safety.
Yeah, yeah.
His six-year-old is still sleeping in the Holy Grail, the boudoir. How old is too old to let your kid sleep in
like
your bed?
Like eight, max.
No. Now, what I'm saying is, he should have put him in his own bed 6 years ago when he popped out of the womb. Like, I'm a guy, I never let you, my child, sleep in my own bed. That never happened. There were, I can think of probably five times, maybe. But I'm sure, like, at your mom's house, you slept in her bed often, I would guess.
A couple times. No, I wouldn't, it wasn't like an every night thing.
You were in your crib as an infant,
a
newborn.
I have memories, shockingly, of climbing out of my crib.
I have memories, too, where you fell on your keister.
Yeah.
But I just don't believe in that. I think childbirth, see, there's things people think about, and then there's things where you're like, oh, it's having a baby. Great, we're going to live happily ever after. Having kids is a tremendous strain on your marriage. Like, it's really hard on your relationship.
Right. I mean, I get it.
So letting your kids sleep in your bed for 6 years is a real problem. Because, by the way, how much more difficult is it going to be for 6 years to let your kids sleep in your bed? And then what's that argument going to do? Because if you follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, there's a huge, long discussion about letting your kids sleep in their bed. And G. Warner Blue Coug TX.
Blue Coug.
Yeah, says, yeah, my ex allowed it until we got married. They were 10 and 7-year-old boys.
Dude. You can't do that, man.
No.
You can't do that.
Kyle on Twitter says, it's never okay. They slept in a cradle in our room for about a month. After that, not once.
See
Amen,
later.
Brother. Amen. Garrett McClintock on Twitter says, I was 5. I'm pretty sure they probably just left me in the backyard or something. Love that. I don't think you can ever do it. I don't. But what you can do is subscribe to The Monty Show on iTunes. Find us on SoundCloud. And, of course, you can watch us record this show live every single day on Periscope. And all you got to do to find that is find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. See you tomorrow. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake. Wake your punk ass up.